Welcome to the new episode of Tangent Train, my passengers. I am your train conductor, Munch, on the internet. If I'm sounding kind of funny, it's because I got a mic, finally. I'm at the Klippevuur Nature Reserve here in Gauteng, South Africa. If you can hear the river sounds in the background and the nature, I like to record in nature because it's better for congruent thought. And being near large bodies of water extends your lifespan, apparently, by 9%. Actually, it's 7. So, I hope you hear all the beautiful nature sounds and all the ideas I'm yet to share with you. And learn, grow into amazing people. Today's topics actually are the insane updates to ChatGPT and GPT-4. We're gonna touch on AGI again, artificial general intelligence. When will computers be on the same level as human beings in intellect, as well as the role that fusion energy is going to play as the company that achieved fusion managed to gain a partnership with Numar, a company, a mining company. So they'll be able to build a fusion reactor for them, and why this is important, why is this relevant. I'm also going to try and break down what fusion is again for all of my listeners. So we'll get into the first stop immediately. There have been about three updates to GPT, ChatGPT, and GPT-4 as a whole. And they are as follows. GPT-4, as of this week, will be rolling out an update in the next 2 weeks, especially to their Platinum subscribers and their Enterprise subscribers, where you'll be able, well, ChatGPT is now able to hear, you and see what you're doing with the camera and mic interface. I posted a video of what that interface is like, and already there's an idea of getting to ChatGPTs or GPT interfaces to speak to one another and opening a podcast and just listening to them speak to one another with custom instructions where they're just gonna talk about stuff. And I'm excited to know what that's gonna sound like in the next couple of weeks, where we have a podcast channel of just two ChatGPTs speaking to one another. And how random is that going to be, and monetize it? That's already a money-making idea on its own. But again, this is only going to be available to ChatGPT Plus subscribers in the next 2 weeks. As well as the up-and-coming releases of DALL-E 3 into the integration of GPT-4, as well as GPT-4 being able to see. The one that's most significant is that GPT-4 is now able to see. Now, the demo they showed is of a user getting GPT-4 to assist them in assembling a bike by sending images of the bike itself, the tools, and then having it give the user instructions on what to do next, correct them where they might be going wrong, and stuff like that. That's just the demo they showed. What people that have access to the beta system have already done is send screenshots of entire apps, let's say, to GPT-4, and then ask it to output the code. Coding your front end a lot quicker, a lot faster, a lot optimized, a lot more optimized, which is going to do wonders and worlds for the open source community. But I wonder what the front-end developers are going to think of such things, as now companies will be able to have full-stack developers, just entirely full-stack developers that are able to balance between AI and their own workflow to move a bit quicker in their software journey. So if you are a front-end developer or a software developer, please leave a comment on how you feel and what you think it's going to be like. And this is before the launch of Gemini 2. Gemini 2 is going to be the next generation of AI by Google, which is said to be nearly multimodal. It's going to be integrated into everything, your Gmail, your Google Docs, your Drive. Already Bard, as it is, can now connect to your Google services, YouTube, Google Docs again, email, your Gmail account, your Google Sheets, your calendar, and retrieve information from your own Google account, and you'll be able to speak to, let's say, the documentations that you own in your Google Docs account and get a breakdown. So this is going to be very helpful if you own a business and you have a sheet of your customers, their emails, their cell phone numbers, and you want to have a series of customized emails to promote your products to them. It'll be as simple as asking Bard to sift through a document or a Google Sheets of your customers and give you a series of customized emails within, as well as the email conversations already that you've had with your customers, for example, to build a deeper connection between you and the people you are selling to if you own a business. And and in general, if you are a student, this is fantastic. Let's say you download a textbook, for example, and a series of textbooks, you'll be able to maybe ask GPT or Gemini 2 or Bard to tutor you and ask you questions about what the answer to certain things are, or have them help you write an entire test paper entirely by uploading the test papers or downloading the test papers to your Google Drive, having it analyze everything and reconstruct a new paper for you to do just for study purposes. And that's just the stuff off the top of my head. People are just gonna go wild with this, and I can't wait for whatever that looks like in the coming days, future months, as AI development accelerates to an unfathomable level, which is amazing. But on top of that, OpenAI goes the extra step to reintegrate the ability of ChatGPT to be able to connect to the internet and browse again via Bing, with their partnership with Microsoft. Obviously, they have a partnership with Microsoft. This all goes to show that AI is a very, very, very big deal. And we still, again, even with all of these amazing innovations that are happening, there's even a service now that lets podcasters have their podcasts be translated into multiple languages so that people can listen across the board throughout other countries in their native language. And this is going to give birth to a new series of amazing and quicker innovations, a new age of content creation tools, and next generation of content creators as well. Just on its own. Just showing in the space of AI, as much as there's innovations happening every week, every other day, every other month, there can still be new ground broken in terms of AI innovation, evolution, and such. People are a bit scared that we're moving too fast with this type of tech, because again, every new innovation can come with its pitfalls. Scammers could use the translations to scam other people in other countries of their own money. who know less or don't know anything about stuff like AI and such. Hackers could send you endless series of hacking emails now on an automatic basis, and tons of deepfake activities. And in terms of AI, in terms of deepfake activities, like, there's been major innovations in terms of video AI, text-to-video AI, of which I covered last year on my podcast. And I'm also going to touch on text-to-world. Yeah, I'm going to touch on text-to-world again, especially when I delve into stuff like artificial general intelligence. But yeah, text-to-video AI has been becoming very, very, very... it's evolving quickly, and it's getting harder and harder to tell the difference. Right now, you can barely check, as it's getting better and better as time goes along, you can barely check that you're even looking at an artificial intelligent video, made by artificial intelligence, I mean. You can barely tell such things. Is how quickly the space is evolving within weeks, days, and even months, along on its journey, bringing me to topic number two. At what point, or when will we hit artificial general intelligence? What is artificial general intelligence? Artificial general intelligence is, let's say, when AI can think and act on the same level as a person, especially in the digital space, to the point where we won't be able to tell the difference if this is a person or this is a robot or an AI. There's something called the Truman Test. Yeah, the Truman Test for that. And within the next coming months, if not weeks, we're gonna touch on something to that level of the Truman Test. In my world, as far as I can see it so far, is that artificial general intelligence will be this big release that shatters the earth and foundationally shifts everything that we understand. Well, it will, but it won't be like a end hit type of situation. It'll be like a smooth transition. AI is going to get so advanced to a point where we won't even be noticing that it's on par to human intelligence, because, again, it's going to be as natural as speaking to somebody else. It'll be as natural as sending a text to a normal human being, as is, it'll be as natural as an everyday interaction. Even on video call, for example, they are video call AIs, apparently. especially with Apple, as they are delving into the space deep time. What I like, what they do, I really don't like the company, for one, even though I have shares in it, but I really don't like the company. But what I like is that they kind of push new innovations to their most efficient extremes at times. For example, they've integrated large language models directly into their keyboard interfaces, which is genius on its own. Because things like autocorrect can work a lot more efficiently as you use them. And on top of that, they get to pick up your lingo and how you speak to other people, and make it easier for you to send replies, write emails, do tedious basic things on an everyday level faster. That's what this innovation space is for. It's to have all these tedious and boring things move quicker and easier, and more seamlessly for the everyday person. Again, back to artificial general intelligence. We won't be able to tell when it happens. It'll just be, again, a gradual shift. The way I say it, it'll be a gradual shift, because it's going to be so seamless to a human interaction that we won't even notice that we've hit artificial general intelligence at that point. Especially if it's like multilingual. On my end, I always envision this thing like the movie Her. If you watch the movie Her, where where you are no longer in this interactive state with your phone or your computer, but instead you are having this unified interaction with your technology and your software and your packages and your business as like a digital entity that you can communicate and interact with on a daily basis. It's going to get to a point where you can be like, okay, I have X amount of dollars. Let's say I have $20,000. I would like to start an online business where I'd like to sell sneakers. And the end revenue by, let's say, December 21st, I would like to be somewhere within the hundred thousands of dollars. And then you just say go, and the AI would build the website, connect the payment system, write the ad system, and create the content that will be advertising, run the ads with the budget that you can specify. Let's say it's about 5 to 10K. And then it'll just be an automated system where you watch the AI work and get paid, or you can even interfere wherever you need to interfere, interject wherever you need to interject, put in your opinion here and there, change things here and there if you need to. But it's going to be such a seamless thing that you do that it'll be more or less an effortless everyday occurrence. And when that happens, there's going to be this major acceleration of innovative ideas and groundbreaking innovations. Already there is in the space right now, on a personal basis. I see a lot of businesses here in South Africa alone that are adopting large language models in their customer service rapport, where they're able to communicate with customers, and then eventually if they need to speak to an actual person, it'll supply that link to the to speak to an actual person. If not, if things like GPT-4's vision model is integrated, then customers would obviously be able to get help within the chat service that the business offers on their website without even having to interact with other people if they don't need to, especially if they don't need to. And it'll make things like having a website a lot simpler, as these chatbots would be able to verify a user and their services in the chat schema of the website, and then take the service from there and move along. Again, this type of stuff always has its caveats. Always have its pitfalls. It's not just rainbows and sunshines all the time. It means people who have bad intentions, for example, could easily just tell their AI to, let's say, here's target X, their email address, their name. Please gather X amount of information on them. If you can find passwords to 1, 2, 3 accounts, to whatever service, please find that and relay that information back to me, or at least guess what they could be. And this AI would be able to siphon the entire internet, look for everything it knows about you, and then give this hacker or a person with horrible intentions your information, the people you care about, who's connected to you, your usernames across these platforms, as well as a suggestion of what the passwords would be, using something called social engineering, where hackers or people that are hired to break into systems basically gather information on who you are, what you like, the things that you do on a daily basis, to kind of hone in on what your most vulnerable protected information might be. In terms of like getting your password, in terms of getting like the PIN to your bank account, in terms of getting like access to ransomware, let's say, by tricking you in various ways that they can trick you. Obviously, I'm always on the side of the innovation will always outweigh the positives, will always outweigh the negatives. as this technology has the potential to shape the world in the most beautiful way. We just have to manage and monetize and protect all the various ways it could ruin the lives of other people. As we go along in this space of innovating such technologies, as we go along, bringing me to the topic of fusion energy. As AI evolves, we're gonna reach a point where we're gonna connect artificial intelligence with what we call quantum computing. I covered quantum computing in some of the previous episodes of this season. But we're going to reach a beautiful point where AI meets quantum computing, which is gonna take a lot of compute power to just sustain and maintain the endless stream of a quantum artificial intelligence system. But luckily we have mechanisms in place to power such technology whenever it needs to come about, being fusion energy. What is fusion energy? Fusion energy is the act of colliding particles at such high speeds that they emit insane amounts of energy back out into the surrounding area, and we can use such energy to power entire cities, entire continents. Apparently, fusion energy is said to be the next generation of energy output because of how clean it is. There's little to no waste in terms of wastage. It's not like nuclear or coal. It does not damage the atmosphere. On top of that, it outputs more power than it needs to maintain it, so it's able to generate power to sustain itself, which sounds like an endless energy machine or perpetual motion machine, but it's not. It's an actual fusion. Reactions happen all the time inside of the sun, even in the core of our earth. So it's taking advantage of already naturally occurring events in the naturally occurring events on a planetary level to create clean energy. The only pitfall with fusion energy is that it's expensive to bring about, develop, and it takes a crap ton of energy to start a fusion reactor. It takes a crap ton. It takes about like 4 cities worth of power just to start the process. But once it starts, it can run nearly perpetually and output tons of power, enough to, again, power one fusion reactor could easily power the continent of Africa. Well, let's say the entire country of South Africa alone, just one of them, because of the immense and dense energy output. For example, the reactor that they're going to build for NUMOC outputs about 500 megawatts on its own. That's just, and on top of that, it'll be powering itself as it does so. Yeah. This is gonna go a long way in terms of, let's say, quantum computers, because quantum computing is gonna take a lot of computing energy, a lot of compute power. So the innovations in the space of zero friction energy transfer, I covered that in my previous podcast episode, where the current cabling system that transfers energy across board to, let's say, houses, entire complexes, buildings and stuff, has an energy loss factor about 32%, if not the lowest has been about 12%, where there's this energy burn of either heat or electromagnetic inferences spreading out and getting wasted into either the atmosphere or the ground or whatever the case may be. Luckily, last month there was an innovation where a material that has a zero friction transfer meaning there's a material that can transfer energy fully without wasting any of it across board in a very efficient way, was created, is going to be implemented into, let's say, energy transfer systems, your internet providing systems, because obviously the faster and quicker an internet line is able to run without any loss or energy burn, the faster your internet is going to be. With power, it means power generators would be able to send power output directly either to the users and the people who use power, let's say the citizens of a country, the businesses and such, directly without having to dull down the energy output with their power box centers across the country or the metal towers. Also, there's been major innovations in wireless power transfer, meaning such, you know, again, giant steel towers with cables running power through them might be a thing of the past in the next 10 to 15 years. But in terms of helping with quantum AI, you can see how obviously it will be able to provide the necessary output to a quantum computer, especially a quantum AI, that it would need to run major inferences, because quantum computing takes advantage of quantum information, quantum systems, where two states can exist simultaneously. An electron can exist as both positive and negative at the same time, regardless of the distance, which is very, very important for stuff like energy or information transfer. They've been testing such systems to be able to transfer information over like a kilometer, 10 kilometers, nearly instantly. Actually, it's such an instant thing. And I say nearly instantly because the way quantum computing works is it's an instant, it's a simultaneous event. They've already proven that this quantum system works faster than the speed of light, as again, it's a simultaneous switch, meaning we'd be able to transfer energy between our devices, let's say, transfer energy between, let's say, government facilities or garage, fuel stations, let's say EVs park at a fuel station, a wireless parking zone. A wireless transfer of energy would take place while the car is parked, and by the time you get back, it's already charged or the battery has been at least boosted for you to get extra mileage out of it if you need to. In terms of quantum computing, it would mean we're able to create solutions to various problems, finding cures for cancer, finding new innovative ways to save our atmosphere, finding insane and creative ways to change the world as we know it in easier ways and quicker. Because again, I broke down the way quantum systems work in my previous episode, in which the way a quantum computer would, let's say, cure cancer would be to run every molecular combination of atoms to go against the cancer cell without damaging the human cell, in every variable inference throughout every known reality. Oh yeah, there's this study out right now that states that the entire universe of energy can exist in a single atom, which is going to be taken advantage of, obviously, in these quantum states. But further adding on my idea that I spoke about in my previous episodes, even last year, where I said the entire universe could honestly just be one atom jumping in and out of space-time at various points, colliding with itself at various energy frequencies, which is what this theory is kind of balancing on already, as I'm seeing. Well, this is it for now. Thank you for listening to my rant on my tangent train. I hope you have an amazing day.